Hello and welcome to the Permaculture Podcast with Scott Mann, a listener-supported program. My guest for this episode is Dr. Wayne Dorband, a scientist and entrepreneur located in Colorado. I would explain more about what he does, but he's involved in so many things that his autobiographical sketch at the beginning provides a much better introduction to himself and his work than I feel I could. Once you hear that, you can find out more by following the links in the show notes. Our topic for this episode is his recently opened Green Hackerspace, a location where individuals can come together to make and create sustainable solutions, whether those are personal projects where they need access to specialized equipment, or to prototype something for possible commercial production. From conversations with some listeners via email, phone, and Twitter, I know you're looking for more in-depth technical ways to begin realizing a different future with permaculture. And not just in garden design or landscape design, but in building systems that we can take into different environments and locations to make more sustainable options available to a wider group of people. That you can take designs and thoughts that are on a page of how to make something and turn it into reality. What Dr. Dorband is doing here, as I'm fond of saying, provides another model for how to do something different in an effective, productive way. If you find this material useful, please make a donation to the show to help me keep producing these episodes. You can make a one-time or sustaining monthly contribution at thepermaculturepodcast.com/support. Now, on to the interview. I'll join you afterwards with a few comments.
Dr. Dorband, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me. As I always like to begin these things, can you give my listeners a bit of your background? Because when I went to look up and prepare for this show, man, you have done a lot over the last 35 years or so, and it's too much for me to try to encapsulate. So could you give us your 2-minute elevator pitch, giving us an idea of who you are and what you do?
Well, sure, Scott. Thank you for asking. I think the best description of myself as a person and a business person is a serial entrepreneur, even more specifically a serial ecopreneur, which is a term that I've heard several people use, but that I think is accurate, and that of those 35 years in business, most of my business activities, and there have been several hundred businesses that I've either founded or been a part of as they've been initiated, most of them have been in the realm of the environmental and ecological world. I have a PhD in environmental sciences, basically the aquatic realm in aquatic ecology, master's degree in aquaculture, and a bachelor's in the sciences also. My mother said that I was the kid that sold lemonade to the kids that had the lemonade stands, so I've always had this entrepreneurial bent. But I'm also a teacher, and I love to teach. I was in the academic world for a number of years, a college professor, and on the administrative side, have been on the board of regents of several different universities and colleges, and still have graduate students. In our current business, which is called Nourish the Planet, we have a whole staff of interns that are mostly graduate students at various different universities that are in our region here, which is Northern Colorado. I'm very fortunate to live in the beautiful foothills of the Colorado Rockies, where we have what we call the Center for Ecolonomic Excellence, which is a series of 3 campuses that are fairly close to each other. One of them having 55,000 square feet of greenhouses that were abandoned and that we've converted back into a sustainable production situation. We also have a warehouse that is walking distance from those greenhouses that's about 20,000 square feet where we do sustainable indoor agriculture activities. And we also have what is called a green hackerspace that I think I'm going to be talking a little bit more about here. And then finally, we have a ranch that is about 10 miles away where we have teaching and a sustainable ongoing production of small livestock, specifically alpacas, and we have goats and sheep and other small livestock, chickens and others, but it is a functioning, sustainable, profit-developing farm that my wife and I live on, and we also teach classes there and bring people in to do internships and other things to learn how to do small acreage, sustainable agriculture. I also have a consulting business in the brownfield space where we work on facilities around the world, really, but mostly North America, where there have been previous manufacturing activities that have created environmental problems. The reason I mention that is that in our Green Hackerspace model, our goal is to actually expand into a number of these kinds of facilities throughout the United States, which are vacant right now, where there's literally hundreds of thousands or millions of square feet in some locations that are vacant, where people could bring in and do projects. So that's a good two-minute elevator talk about my background.
Well, I appreciate that. It rounds everything out very well and pretty quickly, giving us a nice introduction. As you said, I do want to talk with you about the Green Hackerspace, but as we set up the interview, you mentioned your mission statement for the work that you're doing. Could you go ahead and share that with the audience? I think that it serves as a good point to begin the conversation.
Yeah, about a year and a half ago when we founded the Nourish the Planet entity, which, by the way, is an L3C, which is an interesting new form of corporate structure that you can use. And real simply, it's a corporate structure that allows both donations and investments. And Bill Gates was actually very involved in helping it get set up when he went out to turn his life from being a corporate life into a philanthropic life with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. So we formed this entity, Nourish the Planet, as a partnership between a for-profit entity, which is our for-profit group called Mountain Sky Group, and our nonprofit entity, which is the Institute of Ecolonomics. And our mission statement for this new entity, Nourish the Planet, that we founded about 18 months ago, was very simply that in a five-year plan, so between 2012 and in 2016, that we would enable 1 million ecopreneurs to teach the world to feed itself. And so that's the mission statement.
And it's a pretty powerful one when we look at the issues of agriculture and food security within the world. But I'm sure that we could go in a direction that would fill many episodes of the show discussing those issues. So to move from here, I'd like to know what role this new Green Hackerspace that you've opened serves in this process, as well as to discuss the hackerspace itself and how you look to use that to change the world.
Sure. I have to give you a little bit of history. We do webinars through our organization, Nourish the Planet, and last summer we had the chance to interview a fellow named Nicholas Carell. Nicholas is a college professor in the aerospace department at the University of Colorado, a brilliant young man, PhD from MIT in physics and a master's and bachelor's from Harvard, also in physics. His particular interest area now is using robotics in space to help grow food. And we interviewed him, did a webinar with him, and he subsequently invited me up to his laboratory and office space at the University of Colorado, which is only about a 45-minute drive from here where we reside. And when I was there, I was hoping that I'd get to see a hydroponic system that I had seen in the webinar, where they were using some robotic instruments that they had prepared to help do some of the monitoring. And so I was thinking it was going to be right there at the University of Colorado in his laboratory. Well, I was wrong. As it turns out, it was out about a 10-mile drive away at a location called a hackerspace, which I'd never heard of. I didn't know that name. I didn't know what it meant. Actually, what hit me was the word hacker meant to me, and I'm 60 years old, somebody who breaks into computers and does bad things. And so I was thinking, this doesn't really sound like something that has anything to do with hydroponics, but okay, well, I'll go and see what this hackerspace is. So I was kind of expecting to see a whole bunch of guys huddled around computers and trying to figure out how to break into them. Well, that's not what I saw at all. Instead, what it was a place where about 35 people were there working on 3D printers and on CNC machines and on some woodworking equipment and on a whole bunch of projects and also on this hydroponic system that was in one room. And they were members of what was called the Boulder Hackerspace. And this was one of their, what they call open house night. And that's why it was a little bit larger number than would normally be there. And this organization had been around for about 2 years, and I became real intrigued with it. And I came back, and I started to research it. And again, things happen in time because of certain other things in your life. Well, we were about ready to move out of a space that we had been in for 6 years. We had aquaponic systems in it. We had vermiculture systems in it. And we were moving into an adjacent space, much larger space, where we were going to be building some much larger production systems. And our goal was by the 1st of September to actually give up our lease, which was expiring anyway, and to move into this adjacent space. Well, having seen this hackerspace, as I did my research, I realized that there wasn't anything else like it anywhere around us. Matter of fact, I couldn't find anything else that was in the green realm anywhere in the country, because the space down in Boulder really wasn't in the green area. It happened that there was one project that was had a green stint to it, but the rest of the stuff that was being there was very IT-oriented. And so we just decided, as entrepreneurs do, to start a new business, and we converted this 5,000-square-foot space that has been used for the last 6 years as a green indoor agriculture production facility. We also have offices and a conference room and Wi-Fi throughout and others into a hackerspace. So that's the history. We opened January 1st, and we are expanding through open houses and through word of mouth in our area and also through some advertising. And we currently have about 20 members, and we're looking to grow to about 100 would be the top end. And it literally is a space where we provide the space, we provide equipment, we provide training, we provide an atmosphere where people who want to do something that is a project, doesn't have to be green, but related to something that has some element of sustainability, they can come to this place and do it. And probably the best way to describe what we're doing is something that I take from a guy in California who belongs to a hackerspace in the space industry down there. So it's one that's dedicated to actually aerospace work. And here's the way he described his hackerspace, and I think it fits real well for what I would describe ours. It's not a job, it's not a house, it's not a bar, but it's a place where you can come and have fun with your friends, work on projects that you like, and give something back. That's the description that we use to describe what it is. And now a more simple 2-second description is it's a health club for people who want to make things and hack things.
I know the barrier for entry for many of the folks who are out there who want to make things can be very high when you look at needing, well, a CNC machine, even an inexpensive 3-axis or building your own 3D printer. So to hear that more of these types of facilities are opening up is great. And I know that hacker can be such a scary word for many people. Some of the more PC terms that I've heard for this are make spaces or create spaces, is how they're getting sold in my area at least.
That's correct. And we thought a lot about that and really probably haven't made a final decision about whether we'll at some point maybe rebrand towards a makerspace name versus hackerspace. But if you look internationally right now, and we believe there's probably around 1,500 of these kinds of facilities. By the way, we don't think there are any other that really have the green focus that we do. But most of them, I would say 2/3 of them, are branding as hackerspaces. So I think it's almost a generational thing, too, by the way. More people that are boomers and such, they think of that word hacker much like I did, which was a negative connotation. And then younger folks that we have that are involved, when they think about it, they think about it more like a maker. So I agree with you. It's a word that is probably in a transition state as it relates to its branding.
I bridge that gap between the boomers and the millennials. Every time I look up my age, I'm never sure which generation I belong to. Between Generation X, Generation Y, am I a millennial? I'm just past that 30-year mark, so I kind of grew up with my parents' fears of what computers could do versus this idea of what an open future could mean. As I said before coming on the show, I use a lot of free open source software. I have an IT background and everything else, and I'll admit to having read the blue books and the things about the 2600 phone frequencies and things like that from that era of when this idea of finding novel solutions began to develop, though regretfully it did have kind of this counterculture, darker side to it in the beginning, but I'm thankful to see this outward growth of people trying to find new and novel solutions in the modern setting. And it's great to hear that you have this space available. If someone wanted to open up a space like this or replicate this kind of model, you say that you're doing this as an entrepreneur. Did you seek grants in order to build this space, or is it going to be member-driven and supported through a paid membership, or how does that work?
That's a great question, Scott, and there are at least 3 different models out there. The vast majority of hacker space / maker spaces are developed by, operated by nonprofit entities. So either by just groups of people that get together and form a nonprofit or some existing nonprofit, and in many cases by schools, universities, or in some cases by local governments. So I would say, again, out of the 1,500, let's say there are on a worldwide basis, at least two-thirds of those follow that model. And with that model, in most cases, there are some kind of public funding that is sought to be able to pay for the initial development costs and then follow up with that, whatever costs there are, until that entity can reach some kind of a break-even point, which for many of those nonprofit group models, that they never intend to reach that point. So they're always out seeking additional funding from other sources. The second model is the model we've followed, which is more of a corporate for-profit model, again, a little bit more of a health club type of a model, where we've opened this one site with the goal of opening many more, because we do have access to these facilities that I mentioned as I was describing my background that are ex-brownfield sites that are owned by people that I know and some people that I even partner with in business already, that have available space. They're almost all in major metropolitan areas with lots of population base to be able to utilize. So our model is to charge a membership fee for the membership, to have actually a variety of different membership types that you could have, all the way from our smallest membership is $10 a month, where you get 4 visits a month, and it's almost like a punch card. We actually have a receptionist at our facility so that when you come in, you actually check in, and therefore the computer knows that you've been there. And so if you're on the $10 route, you would know that you have 3 visits left in a month, all the way up to what we call our ambassador membership, which is $350 a month, where you actually get dedicated space. You have a cube, essentially, where you can leave projects, you can have meetings, you can do other things that are much more exclusive to your use. And those are targeted for people who are really looking to take this as being the first step in a business development, which, by the way, we're targeting that group, because you ask, how does this serve the purpose of our mission statement that I gave earlier? We firmly believe that technologies in the green space, in that teaching yourself to feed yourself space, will come out of the maker-hacker mentality, open source, sharing, getting information and ideas. So this was, to us, another way in which we can promote that. That was our primary goal from it. In between that $10 a month and $350 is what is be our standard circumstance, which is, again, much like a health club membership, where for $89 a month, you get access during all of our operating hours, which is 8 a.m. to midnight, 365 days a year. We're closed for a few hours to make sure we clean and other sorts of things. And then you don't have dedicated space. Supposed to be putting your projects away when you're done, but you do have use of all of the equipment. You can rent additional space if you'd like it to put a project in, if it's something that's going to be staying for a period of time, and so on. And then lastly, we have what we call the unreasonable hacker, which is somebody who doesn't necessarily have the cash, and maybe we still would like to have them involved, and we ask for some kind of in-kind support then. Maybe they're willing to be our receptionist for 8 hours a month or something, or they're willing to teach some classes for us in some area that they have expertise in. Because that's the second way that we generate income in this corporate model, and that's through classes. And we have classes we give away, we have classes that we charge for, and over time we're going to have classes that even have longer durations than, let's say, an evening. It could be for multiple sessions over a longer period of time. So that's our model, and those are the two most common models. There's a third model, which is really a lot more informal. And I love this one. I hope it develops in a lot of places where somebody just has a little bit of extra space and it's not being used. They've got friends, and it's usually kind of a warehouse kind of a situation, and they've got friends that have similar interests, and they just start to encourage them to get involved. And all of a sudden, you got a group of people that are meeting together. Those are the three models. The third one's the one that's probably the newest and probably got the most to grow. And funding for that usually comes from the people who are literally just getting it going.
They come together. One person says, hey, I've got a table saw. Well, I've got a drill press. Oh, I've got a metal lathe. let's move all this into so-and-so's workspace and get things going.
Yes, that would be the approach.
One question that I have because of running into legal hurdles with developing businesses and different ideas, how hard was it to get this hackerspace past your commercial insurance agent?
Not hard at all, actually. That was a fear that I had also. And probably for us, it was a little less difficult because we already operated the space with lots of folks that were in and out of it. As I mentioned earlier, we have interns. We have a whole variety of people that are not necessarily full-time staff, so they're not covered under workers' comp and those kinds of things. So I think our insurer was already pretty well prepared for the kinds of use that we've had. But frankly, it involved a phone call and a slight change in the language on our policy, no increase in premium. And I was pleasantly surprised. Again, you could research me a little bit more, and I didn't talk about this, but I've actually had a pretty good chunk of my career where I was in the insurance industry and the environmental space and actually helped develop an insurance company that wrote policies for very unique environmental risks. So I do understand that industry some, and I was a little surprised, but insurance wasn't as difficult as we thought it would be.
Well, that's good to hear. That makes propagating this idea a little bit easier if there's a pre-existing model to work off of.
Right.
Do you mind my asking, because you are at the for-profit stage, are you already turning a profit with the 20 members that you have, or is that still going to take some growth?
No, I don't mind you asking, and we're very open about that because, frankly, we want our members to understand it. And the long-term goal is that our members will really be running this for the most part. So it's really important that we stay visible. Again, of those 20 members, about 12 of them are actually in our pay category. The other 8 are the unreasonable category that I talked about, because that was really important for us because we need people to man the reception area and teach classes and such. So our break-even point, because our monthly costs for the facility are about $2,200 a month. You can do the math. If 89 is the average membership, 25 people that are paying, and we're at about 12, so we're about halfway there, and we project we'll be there by the end of April. So we'll be in a cash flow position in about 4 months from initiation.
Even though this is a for-profit model, it sounds like getting your members to engage and be teaching classes and working in the facility and sharing information and ideas with each other, that you're also providing a lot of business development opportunities to these individuals. And I guess that fits in with your long-term mission statement and goal of building these ecological entrepreneurs. Would you say that that's true? Have I kind of hit that right?
Absolutely. Huge win for us is anytime we can help somebody take whatever their maker or hacker idea is and convince them that it's marketable. It's something that they should look at turning into a technology or a product or a service that they can use as a business, whether it's something they do part-time or whether it's what they transition into and it becomes their career. So to do that, we actually seed this group with ideas. So, for example, our open houses are on Thursday nights, so we have one tonight. For the probably 30 or so people that will be there tonight, we'll have up on one of our boards, a big whiteboard, about 20 different ideas that we would like to see people go and help develop. We just don't have the time through our corporate group to do that. And so even in the 2 months, really, that we've been open now, I think we've had 4 or 5 of those 20 different ideas that are on the board that people have already embraced and they're starting to work on. It's too premature to know really where they'll go with some of those, but absolutely, our ultimate goal is to help people transition their maker or hacker instincts into businesses. Now, that said, if you choose to never do that and you just want to hang out and work and have fun with your friends, as I said before, it's something that's always just a fun sideline for you. That's just great, too, and we just love to have as many of those as possible. One of the things we found, because it's probably not something you would typically ask, but it's important and it's a real revelation to us. And I'm a health club guy. I've belonged to health clubs for my whole adult life, and I hadn't thought about this too much as it related to health club, but now more that I do, I realize it's the case. These are very social circumstances. I would say of most of the people that have either already joined or that are telling us they're going to join, they're doing it because they say, I've got this project and I can't have a CNC machine and I can't have a 3D printer and I really got this project and I want to work on this project. And you know what? I don't know whether I'm going to be a member for more than a couple months because I've just got this one project. When I'm done, I'm going to probably cancel my membership. And we said, that's fine. That's great. Or they say, you know, I just got this that I want to do. They rarely talk about the fact that they want to just hang out with buddies. What we find is that people may join because they have a project in mind. The reason they stay and the reason they come is because of the social aspect of it. People don't want to work alone. They want to be in an atmosphere with other folks who are doing similar sorts of things. The social atmosphere of these hackerspaces is amazing, and it's really passionate. It's energetic. It's exciting. And we talked a little bit about this before we started. I'm a big open source advocate. I also see a real place for dedicated IP that has non-open source sides to it too. But I think a lot of the new ideas that are going to come into the space that we're interested in, which is the ecological sort of space, the mixing of ecology and economy, are going to come from people who have open source types of interests. And so we're trying to really foster that. So a little bit longer answer to your question, but yes, we absolutely want to seed ideas and build business people if we can.
Well, I appreciate that answer. It brings all that together nicely. One thing about that social side that I can certainly think about being someone who sits in a basement by myself as I put this show together is that when you have that kind of environment, you also bring together a lot of different expertise that you might not necessarily know about just by reaching out to someone who, if you're working on a project, you call someone to have something machined on a CNC machine, but you might not know that they also have an artistic background and might be able to do some concept sketches for you or these other things that you wouldn't learn about outside of that social environment.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. There's a lot of unexpected benefits that come. Certainly the ability to tap into a wide variety of other skill sets is one of those that people, that when they get engaged, they don't realize that that's going to happen, and it does. We understand it. We see it. But you're right. Absolutely.
I have two other quick questions as we bring this around. One is, do you have any vested interest in the IP that these individuals are producing?
No, not within the context of the hackerspace. However, if they take an idea we throw out at them and take it beyond the hacker, I'm going to come a couple nights a week and work on this, to where they are now saying, you know what, I'd like to take this further, but I really think I need some additional funding for it, so I need this equipment or whatever, we will absolutely come alongside them and say, okay, we'll help you with that. And by doing that, we're going to take a piece of your company. So yes, the answer is the goal, we haven't done that yet in 2 months with the facility, but the goal is that projects will emerge that will require additional funding. It's usually the biggest thing that's needed. And we're going to be open-minded to listening to proposals. Matter of fact, right before I came in to do this interview with you today, Scott, I was visiting with a gentleman that is one of our hackers that already has that in mind for one of the projects. Yes, that is a goal, and we will take equity interest. What we don't do, and this is what we think sort of differentiates us, is we don't want to come in with a briefcase in hand and say, okay, now you're to this point, you're going to have to start paying us consulting fees of X dollars an hour, and we'll help you move a business ahead. Instead, we're going to say, we'll help you raise money, and if we are successful at doing that, and if you end up having a successful business, we're going to have some piece of ownership in that.
It was one of the concerns that I've had, as I know that there are certain companies now that are having their non-disclosure agreements and other things, saying that for programmers and such in the IT community, that anything that they produce both on the job and sometimes they're even implying afterwards are owned by the company.
Everything people do in this hacker environment is theirs. Essentially, they're going to have to reach out to us. We'd hope that they'd reach out to other buddies that they have in the room and in the group. And if they need to get those funded in some way, then there probably will be some kind of business relationship that develops out of it. But we don't impose any kind of restricted use or development and so on. Looking ahead, if we see some of that occurring even overtly in the space, we probably will do our best to discourage it. But that's down the road.
Then my last question before we bring this to a close, as I know you need to head off and I do as well, is are you in a place where, I guess this is a two-parter, are you in a place where if someone was interested, they could contact you about replicating this model? And if so, how would they do that?
Thank you for asking. And the answer to the first is yes, we absolutely would. And certainly we're looking to duplicate it ourselves. Quite honestly, we are right now looking for partners that are excited about this kind of a concept. So not only would I accept that, in the very near future, we're going to be using our network relationships, be reaching out broadly and saying what we're going to be limited by isn't the space, but it's actually having other people that are willing to take some time and try to see if they can make a business venture. And then your second question, yes, they can give us a call at our offices here in Northern Colorado, and the phone number is 303-495-3705. And they can ask for myself, Dr. Dorband, Wayne Dorband, or any number of others of our professionals here. Or they can email me real simply. My email address is Wayne Dorband, just sort of just like it sounds, WayneDorband@gmail.com. Or go to nourishtheplanet.com, which is one website that we have, or our actual Green Hackerspace website, which is just that, greenhackerspace.com.
And I'll make sure to include all of that information in the show notes and the website for everybody to reference so they can get in touch with you if this idea strikes a chord and they want to see this develop, because I would certainly love to find somebody in this area who'd be interested in bringing something like this online. Well, Dr. Dorband, thank you so much for taking this time out of your day to sit down and talk with me. It's interesting and exciting, and I really like the collaborative spirit that you've put into all of this, even though it's a for-profit venture, which I know some people, when you hear for-profit, it can be a little discouraging to think about that cooperation. But you're doing a lot for people who want to come into this environment, and I really appreciate your work. Thank you.
Well, thank you. And again, remember, we even talked about another topic, so maybe we'll have another call sometime, which is the whole concept of economics that might help some of your folks get a little more comfortable with the whole profit side of things. And I can describe that in another interview, another time.
I was going to include that in my wrap-up for the show that we had talked about that, but there it is. And I certainly would like to have you back some other time to talk about that, because I'm really interested in it. Thank you very much. We will definitely do this again sometime soon.
Sounds good.
And that was Dr. Wayne Dorband. As you heard, we're interested in doing another show on his work with Ecolonomics, which he can correct me on if I get this wrong, but is the idea of creating a relationship between a strong economy and a healthy ecology as a formula for a sustainable future. That material and the example of this green hackerspace are important to me as a permaculture practitioner, teacher, and enthusiast on several levels. The first is, as I said, as a model for how to do something different and to replicate what's already working to have a better shot of success. Will some still fail? Yes. There's inherent risk in everything that we do, but just as some will fail, others will succeed. Another part of this is that building a green hackerspace and being part of a maker community plugs you into people who are doing things, that are working on projects and making solutions, and you can get to know these collaborators, their talents and abilities, and in turn foster one another's growth. Are all of them likely to be permaculture practitioners? No, not by a long stretch. You may be the only one there, but that's important. To take these ideas of ethical ecological design further and to a larger audience, we can't stay in insular groups talking jargon all day. We need to get out there and show people how to make this work and build our social and intellectual capital along the way by talking, doing, and exploring with others. Lastly, and to me at this point perhaps most importantly, is finding ways to make permaculture profitable enough to earn a living from. How can we build a professional class of practitioners if they can't raise a family or meet their other needs on their income from this work? In my experience so far, the ones who are making a living from this are in the minority and are largely names that you'd already recognize. But I'd say that the majority trying this aren't earning an income from it or able to devote themselves to it full time. I think that business acumen and expert mentoring is necessary to get things going in the right direction. Speaking to my own life, I've spent the last 2 years carving out my own little niche in all this, which works well for who I am, what I do, and how I work. As I continue this work with the podcast, my position and the voice that I have continues to develop and grow and connect with more of you. Right now, the listenership and website traffic is growing at around 10% per month, so what I'm doing seems to be working. But I had numerous other business attempts fail before I found my own success, which included several failures leading up to my creation of this podcast. For years, the ideas of an entrepreneurial spirit and how to succeed at business and just how much hard work is involved with getting yourself off the ground never made sense to me. Years, years and years working to get to this point in my own life. And as I think about it right now, it leads to a number of what-if questions on my part about how I could have done things differently, but that doesn't really change that I'm here now, but instead affords me the opportunity to help people who follow on this road with me or after me reduce the amount of time that it takes for them to get here. And I think a large portion of that is working with others, to have a mentor to discuss your ideas with, to surround yourself with a group of people inside and outside of business to ease making connections. That idea of it's not what you know, it's who you know, being able to make those kinds of connections make a big difference. But also collecting a brain trust around you of people who you can bounce ideas off of other than your mentor, people who you can trust to show you the problems that you're likely to encounter, point out errors, but also show you different ways to succeed. That if one direction might not work, how a little tweak somewhere else can get you where you're going. It's best not to develop in a vacuum. And lastly, out of this, you also should have a support structure to get through the rough times and assuage any doubt. And that support structure can be very helpful with keeping you going and moving forward and moving forward and not falling back into bad habits or stepping away from your idea because it's taking a little bit longer to get there. As I learned from a friend of mine with web development, unless you spend a lot of money up front to do real serious advertising campaigns and get your numbers up early, it can take 6 to 12 months of regular updates to a website before you really start to get the organic growth and watch it begin to take off. That can be hard to be sitting there and waiting and waiting. But before I digress too far, that idea of surrounding yourself with good people leads me back around to replicating this green hacker space as a way to connect with those types who think differently than you do and are open to collaborating with one another in whatever direction they're going. If you want to do that, if you want to build one of these green hacker spaces, please contact Dr. Dorband and see how you can work together to make it happen. Be one of his 1 million ecopreneurs and bring permaculture to the table when you do so. Information to be able to contact him and start that process are in the show notes. If you enjoy this episode, please leave a note on the Facebook wall for the show, facebook.com/thepermaculturepodcast, by sending me a tweet at permaculturecst, or leave something in the show notes. Dr. Dorband came to my attention thanks to my volunteer production assistant, James, and I'd like him to know what you think. Coming up in the near future, we've got the following episodes and guests. My story will be our next show. For those of you who listen and wonder, what do I do next? I hope that that story can be inspiration, either as a budding practitioner or someone considering taking your first PDC and making a career change. It took me a long time to get here, and I went through many steps and stumbles before I did. But now the door's open, and it's a really nice place to be in. Or if you're one of those folks who's been at this for a while and you're beginning to struggle, hey, I'm here with you. We can make this happen. On March 13th, Bill Summers of the Permaculture Credit Union returns to share information on community-developed financial institutions and other forms of community-supported banking. March 20th, Pam Warhurst, chair of the Forestry Commission of Great Britain and also chair of Incredible Edible, joins me to discuss her work with creating Incredible Edible and how to eat our landscapes. You can find out more about her by searching for Pam Warhurst TED Talk and watching her video. Her TED Talk forms the basis of our conversation, though I plan to expand on the ideas presented. given the longer format of this show. Dan Kittredge and I have been playing phone and email tag lately to get him back on the show to discuss remineralizing soils, and now that we're finally connecting again, that's probably going to happen sometime in this mix as well. I'll also have Dr. Dorben back in the near future to discuss ecolinomics. Let me know if you have any questions for him as a follow-up to this conversation, or for that topic, as well as any of the other upcoming guests, by sending me an email, show@thepermaculturepodcast.com, or leave a message on the voicemail line, 717-827-6266. Until the next time, take care of the Earth, yourself, and each other.